Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast number 158. It's a slightly different podcast today, but with me in Sussex, as usual, I have...
Rafe Blanford.
And up in Hull...
David Gilson.
Yes, Ewan Spence, the inimitable Scotsman, is over at South by Southwest in Austin with his podcaster's hat on, but he has been interviewing some people which are very relevant to the Symbian scene and the mobile scene. And so what we'd like to do in this podcast is splice in three of his short interviews, no more than about 6 or 7 minutes each, and then we're going to comment and generally chew the fat after each one. So first of all, to kick things off, Ewan's been looking at Nokia themselves and their attitude to their plans going forward, what's happening with Ovi. He's been interviewing Tero Ojanpira, as you'll hear from this clip.
Ewan Spence here for All About Symbian, and it's an Insight special, coming of course from South by Southwest, where the light and fluffy video diaries are ongoing, but we can also do a little bit more in-depth with audio as well. I'm joined now by Nokia's EVP, Dr. Tero Ojanpira. Welcome to the Insight podcast, Tero.
Thank you.
And tell everybody what your role actually is inside Nokia.
I'm in charge of our services and developer experience. So meaning Ovi Maps, Ovi Store, etc.
And Nokia has had some big news over the last couple of weeks, as listeners and readers to the site will know. What's the feeling inside Nokia? You know, is it positive? Is it just that, well, we have to make this was a decision we had to make and we'll live with it? What's the feeling inside the upper levels?
Yeah, I would describe it more like it's about going for the opportunity. So there is such a great opportunity with all the growth of the smartphones, etc. So both working on the with the first of all on the Microsoft. If you think about that, we have a three pillar strategy. One pillar is the smartphones and working there with the Microsoft, and we'll talk about that in more detail. Going for the web for the next billion, that is on the lower end of the market, really seeing the opportunity. That also the low end phones can be smartphones. And the third one is disruptive technologies. It's about really going for what's going to happen beyond all of this that we know today.
Okay, given your role in services, a lot of external commentators were hoping that Nokia would look at Google and have Google Android. But Google's service package didn't quite match up with Nokia's service one offerings, did it?
Yeah, if you look at the Microsoft collaboration, I think there is a lot of sort of the complementary areas. I think first you look at what's important for us is that the differentiation. So you look at, hey, with Microsoft Windows Phone, we can differentiate. So if we want to build that great sort of the video phone, we can tailor the platform in a specific areas. And then on the other hand, the services area, we have such a great opportunity with for example, Ovi Maps, bringing that location experience, local search, our expertise with Navtech into that collaboration is creating a great opportunity.
You've mentioned Maps there, but one of the other services where both yourselves and Microsoft are quite strong is in music. Ovi Music is now one of the leading mobile purchasers of music on handsets around the world. Microsoft have their Zune system, which sits on Xbox and their own players as well. There seems to be a lot of synergy there as well, but of course music is a bit of a different beast to mapping data, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's entertainment and music in general is an area that is of course very exciting. First thing I did when we announced the deal and I went home, I have three kids, so I said that, hey kids, now we go to the shop and buy an Xbox Kinect so that we can start to design that great new mobile gaming based on location connected to the Xbox. So we don't know what's gonna look like yet, but in some ways it's just giving a flavor of the opportunity. We haven't actually said anything more that there is an opportunity, because we need to work out, the deal needs to be closed, we need to get on. But I think it's a great potential also in the area of entertainment.
I mean, this is doing a tweak to the roadmap. So if you took Nokia's roadmap of where they wanted services to go last year and then looked at the one this year, what differences has this will this collaboration from Microsoft make to where that path is going?
Yeah, I don't know. As such, will it immediately make anything? The one thing that I know for sure, of course, we now need to make sure that we have a Windows Phone client for Maps, because that is, of course, the immediate in the location area, expanding the reach there, and not only for their Nokia Windows phones, but also for other Windows phones. So I think there is going to be some new clients, but beyond that, it's kind of too early to say. I think we will continue to push the strategy forward.
When it's slightly unclear as that, how do you ensure then that you can tell a good, solid story to the third-party developers, a lot of whom have sat down and done their best to get to grips with QT and are now worried that they're going to have that all that learning has gone to waste?
Yeah, developers are, as we know, they are really in the core of the industry, because the third-party innovation and really bringing that's where the life is, that's where the action is. And in that sense, so what we are doing is, so first of all, working a plan and I think it's also important that we get feedback that what do we need to do to help developers to migrate over. It's about sort of the working together. At the same time, I think that I've been talking even in South by Southwest here is that the people are asking, what can I do today to actually work on the Symbian to tap into that opportunity, because there is plenty of Symbian devices out there and there will be more. And that's one area. There's also quite a lot of interest, interestingly, into our S40 platform, that is the lower end feature phone platform, because people are seeing that, hey, there's an opportunity. We just launched with the Foursquare their app into the S40, and in that sense, that then looking forward, Windows Phone, how can we help people to make that journey from the Symbian to the Windows Phone and make it as smooth as possible?
When making that journey, who, for want of a better term, retains the developer? I mean, Windows Phone is Microsoft and Nokia, so do you continue, you know, driving as many people as possible through Forum Nokia? Are yourself and Microsoft going to have a central portion? Has that been decided yet in terms of, you know, being the first point of contact for the developer?
Yeah, of course, that depends a little bit what is the question there. Is this, when you think about it, if you want to download the tools for developing on Silverlight or any other, of course, then it's very natural you go to Microsoft. But when you talk about promotion, your application and kind of driving in the specific markets, of course, Nokia with OviStore, we have built a great system there for campaign management, for merchandising, and helping to promote the application. So that's what we continue to do also in the Windows Phone environment.
Is there any risk that you fracture the developer story of Windows Mobile Phone?
I think that what we need to do is to really work out that it makes, in the end, it's about what makes sense to the developer. So I cannot go into the details because they have not been working out, it's work in progress as we speak. But at the same time, the important thing is that for the maximum benefit for the ecosystem as we speak, we need to make sure that we leverage the strength that we have. We take what Microsoft has and build something that makes sense to the developer. We should also remember that if you think about that developer, that if you have an app for Symbian and you now expand it to the Windows Phone, you might have even an S40 version. So you want to actually make sure that if you're in a specific country, the promotion happens in a way that, hey, we can actually push you in all of those platforms. So we are going to build tools for that and make that type of the thing happen. So it's about how can the developer, we can present the biggest opportunity when it comes to the distribution across all the platforms.
Now, for a long time and up until the announcement, that the answer to that was QT, which would provide your development in Symbian and provide your development in MeeGo as well. So has QT been given a limited shelf life now, and you're just saying to everybody it's time to move on from that, or what's the value proposition to staying with QT short and long term?
Yeah, I think QT, of course, it's a great development tool, and especially with QT and QT Quick. So I think it's the investments in a way that, okay, getting into that train is that it simplifies your life. So, and we will continue to push it. We will support it for Symbian and going forward. So I think there is it is there.
There is this period now from here where it's just Symbian going forward into Windows Mobile Phone, which will be happening months and over the next year. How can you convince them that that's just not a lost 9 months in developer time and sales time? What would you say to them to say, look, come with us and join in the whole journey?
Yeah, I think the point there is that with the Symbian, we are getting across the Symbian and S40 more than 4 million downloads a day. So there is business to be made out there. We have many success cases. So if you have a great app and you want to be part of that that sort of the consumer engagement, so join the party now. And I think we are going to use different means to help people to drive engagement and success in the Symbian. And at the same time, when we're doing the migration to Windows Phone, it's even part of the journey. It's going to be helpful for the developer. So my message would be that, okay, if you are a Symbian developer, continue to invest, continue to drive it. There are new applications that certainly the people using Symbian today would love to have. So I think there is a business to be made.
Finally, if you could have one application on Symbian right now, what would you like to see from a third-party developer?
One application on Symbian. Yeah, I think not specifically, because it's always hard to innovate, but the gaming, I think there is still room for also others than Angry Birds. I think gaming is an area where we see there's plenty. If you look at the Symbian sort of the distribution, we have roughly 60% of the apps are games, so I think there is interesting opportunities there. Personally, I think a nice new game with addictive features would be great.
So there we go. Tero, thank you very much for your time. As always, you can find more information on us at allaboutsymbian.com, and I'm guessing people can go to forum.nokia.com as well.
Thanks very much, Ewan. Rafe, is it possible to just summarise some of the key points from that?
Yes, absolutely. I think there are some interesting bits in there. Obviously, Tero, as the head of developer experience and services, is actually one of the key positions where there's still, understandably, a lot of uncertainty, because the Nokia Microsoft service or deal is still to be finalised and to be signed. But I do think there were some interesting elements in there. One thing that struck me in the beginning was the emphasis on the three pillars of Nokia strategy. You know, the discussion has been dominated by the smartphone, the Nokia Microsoft deal. But I think it's important to remember there are two other pillars of Nokia's business. You know, the next billion, or the Series 40 element, or in Series 30 as well, which in terms of number of devices, you know, massively outweighs the smartphone. Clearly, it's a very different kind of business. It's more about managing logistic chains, supply chains, controlling costs, whereas smartphone, there's more of an emphasis, I think, on maybe innovation and, you know, the high-end devices, where obviously margins are high. But I think, you know, we'll be taking a closer look at the next billion over the course of the next few months and going forward onto that. And then, of course, there's that third pillar as well, which is the sort of disruptive element, the emerging technologies, which is what MeeGo is going to be used for. I think we'll see the first signs of that with the first MeeGo device. But that's obviously going to be important to Nokia's future, because it's already well talking about what's now. And of course, that's very relevant. But one of the problems I think Nokia had recently was not necessarily spotting market trends early enough. So it will be one that's well worth watching and see how Nokia performs there. And obviously with Stephen Leadock coming in, there is a different culture. So we may see, you know, a more rapid movement from Nokia, one that's able to make decisions more quickly in that area, and that may well have an impact. I think it is worth emphasising here that, again, you know, Tero was emphasising the opportunity that exists, but, you know, detail is pretty thin on the ground. I think that's largely, as I said before, because the detail is, you know, yet to be signed. And it is going to take a while to work things out. And people may not be aware of this, but typically with big strategic decisions like this, you know, they will get made. And obviously there is detail on a possible layout. But then, it's, you know, the managers at lower levels will spend a lot of time eking out the details piece by piece with a lot of detail. And that period, you know, does take quite a while. And so I suspect it will be a few months before we hear anything major, and perhaps even longer, because clearly that kind of information is fairly competitively sensitive. And while Nokia had no choice but to sort of announce that this was going to happen, I mean, it would have leaked anyway, and for various legal reasons as well, we might not hear some of the finer details until later on.
Yeah, the three-pillar thing intrigued me. I still think Nokia, perhaps underemphasize the role of Symbian over the next year or two in their lineup. They've got these three pillars, none of which include Symbian in any shape or form, and yet they're still emphasizing this. Okay, it's a quote franchise platform. They're still emphasizing that we're going to sell another 150 million Symbian smartphones. We're going to bring new devices to market with 1 gigahertz processors, new this, new that. Surely there should be a fourth pillar that, or it's an underlying pillar that's going to support the other three while they take off.
Well, I, to be honest, I think Symbian is part of the third pillar, and it's people not listening to what Nokia is saying carefully enough in that smartphone strategy. I mean, it's fairly obvious that Windows Phone strategy will take several years to implement, and it's not that Nokia is giving up in the meantime. Symbian is going to be providing that transition, and inevitably that means that there is quite significant developments to come. You alluded to them there with the sort of new hardware platform, the gigahertz processor. Perhaps Nokia could have done a better job communicating that. But to my mind, the smartphone pillar for the next 2 years, you know, it's about Symbian with Windows Phone being introduced. And obviously there is a period at which it switches over from being 50-50 to, you know, more Windows Phone or whatever. But clearly, you know, people are more interested in talking about the future. I think, is it arguable that Nokia could have made a better attempt to communicate that? Quite possibly. Maybe that's an opportunity to talk about something another time. In terms of the services, which obviously Terra is also responsible, I think there, again, there was very little information. I think one interesting detail was that clearly plans to create a Windows Phone client for Ovi Maps, which I think, given that the richness and the functionality within Ovi Maps is obviously something that's going to be a good decision, I think it's taken as a given anyway. And to confirmation there that you'll probably see this client running on other Windows Phone devices. And so people have talked a lot about how Nokia will be dependent on Microsoft, but it seems quite clear here that Microsoft will be dependent on Nokia for the Maps element. And as we've said before, it's a very important future part of any mobile platform.
Yeah.
I think the discussion in the second half, you know, with you and turn to developers. Again, there's still decisions to be made. Sounds a bit like a broken record there. And I think a lot of the discussion here amongst analysts and interested commentators is who's going to end up owning the developer. Will it be Nokia? Will it be Microsoft? And I think we got a hint of what's the answer to that. It's going to be Microsoft is going to continue to own, or rather will own, the tool chain with its Silverlight tools and everything like that. It was made quite plain that the sort of promotion and distribution would still very much be in Nokia's ballpark, and that's really where developers make money. I thought particularly interesting was the idea of presenting developers an opportunity to go right across Nokia's platform. So, you know, Series 40, Symbian for the next few years, and of course, Windows Phone. And combining, I think, particularly Series 40 and the smartphone platform together does represent a significant opportunity just because of the volumes involved. And I think that will obviously involve stepping up the efforts for developers around Series 40. And there's a couple of technologies that could come in there. Obviously, HTML5, there's also existing Java. But it does make you wonder whether Qt might come in as a technology for Series 40. And the last bit of that interview with Tero, there was an emphasis on the continuation of Symbian, which I think sort of answers the question you had earlier, Steve, saying that, you know, Qt is still going to be important for the Symbian devices and going on elsewhere as well, possibly. And there are a lot of Symbian devices to come, and so there remains a big opportunity for developers. So I think it's great to hear all of that from, you know, one of Nokia's executives. And it's a little frustrating, of course, not getting more detail, but as I explained before, I think that's somewhat inevitable.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to some more details, because I am finding the notion of all this rather confusing, because if we're keeping the Ovi brand going, but we're heading into, in a couple of years, we know, into the Windows Phone ecosystem. So it almost seems as if it's going to be, well, if we're keeping the Ovi store going, it's going to be like an Ovi ghetto in the Windows Phone marketplace. Which, does that mean there's going to be apps that are exclusive to only Nokia phones, or what? We really do need more details. Developers need more details, because they need to know who they're going to be marketing to.
Well, I think the sort of desire for details is understandable, but I don't really think it's necessary. I mean, there's a couple of issues there. Ovi Store itself is going to continue because it will be needed on other devices. And then there's a question of what happens on the Windows Phone device as well. At the moment, Windows Phone Marketplace already supports kind of additional marketplaces. You know, when you buy a Samsung phone, you'll get the Samsung store in addition to the kind of standard Windows Phone store. With Nokia, you know, there's clearly potential to do something like that, but Microsoft and Nokia could choose to pursue another avenue. I mean, they may look to combine their back ends. We've talked about, you know, Nokia's ability to have operator billing in many markets. So I think actually it's a bit of a red herring to get too bogged down in the details of how it will all work. I think what, you know, if I was making a best guess, I would expect we might see even a rebrand so that ObviStore is actually on the phone in some form or another, perhaps combining with Windows Marketplace. And clearly there's, you need to avoid the confusion of consumers there with too much duplication or brand marriage or whatever. But as long as there's an app store, where and exactly how it works in terms of the back end is pretty irrelevant, as long as developers have a point of entry for that, and that's, we've already been told, is going to be through both Microsoft and OviPublish. Consumers won't care as long as there is an app store, and it's quite clear that is going to continue. And I suspect much of the discussion that's going on now is the technical details of how it will work and who will own which elements of it. But from what we've been told so far, we know there will be an app store. We know that Nokia and Microsoft will both accept applications. And to answer one of your questions there, David, yes, I'm sure there will be Nokia-exclusive applications, just as there are on the Samsung, LG, and HTC devices. I think most third-party developers will look to put them into the central app store, which they will be able to do through Nokia, or say go direct via Microsoft, simply because they'll want to get onto as many devices as possible. But just as there are exclusive Nokia apps on certain devices, I'm sure that will continue in the Windows Phone world.
Yeah. Let's move on. We've got two more interviews from Ewan to squeeze in. This next one's interviewing Peter Vesterbak, and I'll say pronounce his name there because it's quite hard to pick up in the speed of the interview. He's from Rovio, talking about Angry Birds, the success of their multi-platform franchise, and their strategies going forwards.
Ewan Spence here for the All About Symbian Insight podcast at South by Southwest, and I have the world's number one drug pusher, or at least digital drugs, Peter Vesterbacher from Rovio, the guys behind lots of schemes, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're known for one.
Yeah, there's, Angry Birds.
Yes, Angry Birds. Now, we're not here to talk about Angry Birds, though, are we? We're here to talk about Angry Birds Seasons.
Exactly.
The one that you haven't sold 100 million copies of yet.
Yeah, but we're on our way, so, you know, we'll get there. Angry Birds Seasons, yeah, so we just did an update for Symbian as well, so the St. Patrick's Day update, so it's all about going green, get lucky, and it's more pigs than ever.
So it strikes me that when I looked at it first, it seemed that Angry Birds was the main game, and then Halloween Angry Birds Seasons was just I just have a little play around with that.
Sure.
But it's the other way around, isn't it? Angry Birds Seasons is the one that's constantly delivering and updating, and Angry Birds retains the core functionality.
Yeah, but Angry Birds, we're updating that as well, and we're bringing new episodes and everything. But the important thing is that that's kind of like central to our model, is that, that we're delivering a service. So we don't deliver, you know, like static pieces of content. So that's actually very different from the traditional, like, players in gaming, where you ship a disc, a piece of plastic, and then you forget about it most of the time. But we actually, every 4 weeks on regular Angry Birds, we update it. And we'd love for Nokia to be a bit faster getting, you know.
And Apple and Google and everybody
else. Of course. And then Angry Birds Seasons, we do an update for every major holiday season. So we did Halloween, Christmas, Valentine's Day, and now St. Patrick's Day. And it's actually something that's very cool and resonates very nicely with fans, but also with people like retailers. Now that we're doing a lot of merchandise and stuff, that there's a huge peak, you know, obviously around these holidays, and there a lot of them are very, very commercial. So there's lots of cool opportunities around seasonal content.
Well, what interests me is that you have an application, but the application is not the end of the transaction with the user. It's exactly. It's the start of a transaction, and it doesn't matter the platform either.
Exactly.
Although I would really like it if you could move what I've managed to do on the iPad into the Symbian device, so I don't have to do the same.
We will. That's actually.
You will?
Yeah.
Right. Interview over. Happy. There's an exclusive.
We will. So, we've been working on that for quite a while, and we will actually provide a way to sync all your devices from your iPad to your Symbian device to your WebOS device to your Windows Phone 7 device, hopefully.
And to Facebook?
And to Facebook, yeah.
And to angrybirds.com?
Absolutely, angrybirds.com, coming in May.
So essentially, you're taking a little slice out of everywhere, aren't you?
Absolutely, but it's something that's very important, that what we are all about is building an entertainment franchise. And the thing is that it's very, very important here that we don't view these as disposable games. I mean, we had, Iwata-san, CEO of Nintendo, saying that, the whole industry is under threat because of, really inexpensive, some would say cheap games on, the mobile platforms. But we don't mind, being cheap. We are offering, cheap games with free, so even better than cheap, free updates every 4 weeks. And it's part of providing something that is constantly fresh, always fresh. And it's not a throwaway item, but, we're building an audience. And I think that this is something that is not well understood in the industry. And we're getting a lot of heat when I say that, like the traditional, console model of gaming is dead. And I really believe that it is, because you have to provide something that is constantly fresh. And even more reason, if you make a game that costs tens or maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars, then why wouldn't you keep it alive forever? Why would you just put it on a disc and forget about it? And what we're trying to do is actually create experiences, create games that will be with you hopefully forever.
Well, yeah, because you can only use the great big crow that kills everything, just the one. So we're stuck on level 59.
All right.
But anyway, Peter, it's great to hear that there's continued success, even if nobody else can realize what you're actually pushing on with that little tiny 99-cent game.
Right.
Best of luck as always, and keep us infuriated into the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what we'll do. Thanks.
Thanks, Ewan. Great to hear from Angry Birds Mighty Eagle there. I think I won't spend too much time summarizing here, but the interesting points to me were the idea that they're not delivering static content anymore. It's not a piece of plastic coming out of Gamebox, the traditional console model. It's about building an entertainment franchise. And of course, we've heard this from Rovio before, but I think explaining that in a little more detail is really interesting, because in one sense, it's quite disruptive to the games industry, and it's a very welcome move for me, at least, away from the idea of disposable games, which have so dominated the app store in recent times. And, the idea that, you have a real lifetime relationship with your consumer as part of an ongoing franchise. And, you can obviously extend that outside the game. We've seen all the plush toys, the board games, and many other things that Rovio and its partners have been up to. But it was also nice to hear about a couple of the upcoming features, with the idea that you'll be able to sync between devices. I know that's a frustration I have, having played Angry Birds or across multiple devices, and then you're going to be even more true when it's once it's on Facebook and angrybirds.com.
And every time you race, you have to start all over again. I agree, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah, so it's good to see. I mean, it's no surprise that Rovio are on top of things like that. But from a technical point of view, that's far from, simple to implement. Requires a certain amount of back-end structure, and obviously, it's quite interesting because you have to have some kind of ID system as well, and I wonder how exactly they'll be handling that. And it's also interesting to hear, they have got the update mechanism in place, and it's sort of coming every 4 weeks on the main version of Angry Birds, and obviously also with Angry Birds Seasons. It was interesting to hear one of the frustrations there with Nokia with the Symbian platform is the difficulty with upgrading the versions, and we've certainly seen that, I think, in the Angry Birds St. Patrick's Day edition that we saw recently, a couple of people saying in the comments they would have difficulty upgrading. That's partly the fault of Obi Store not having an upgrade mechanism, made more frustrating by the fact if you try and download an updated version of an application you already installed, it won't work. You actually have to uninstall it first and then install it again, and hence we recommended that people use this kind of the manual update process which is built into the game. But even that is not without its faults, because you have to open a sys file via the browser and then make sure that is opened and installed. So I think just one for Nokia to, there is going to be increasing demand for the idea of updating your applications, and I know it's in the roadmap, and I think they need to make sure that arrives as quickly as possible. Yeah. So, great to hear from Angry Birds, one of the hit games on smartphone platforms, and Rovio have been around for a long time, so it's always a pleasure to have them on the podcast or feature them all about Symbian, because remember when they consisted of relatively few developers, and even now they're not that big a company, but I think they're on everybody's lips for very obvious reasons, and it's a very well-deserved success.
Yes, you have to wonder what they're going to do next to top Angry Birds. I mean, at the moment, they're kind of a one-trick pony, because this is their biggest game by a gazillion miles. At some point, they're going to have to move on, though. The people, you're talking about syncing there, and they're setting up this system whereby in maybe 6 months or a year's time, people will be able to sync their Angry Birds progress across the different platforms. But surely by then, we'll all have got fed up of hurling birds at pigs. I mean, already I've deleted the game from my Nokia because I got utterly fed up. I got to a level about, I don't know, 60 levels in, and I just couldn't get past it. I played it 50 times and got absolutely nowhere, and I deleted it in utter frustration. And surely in a year's time, Rafe, won't they need something different to build on top of this new synchronization technology?
I would say about this is that if you look at games, typically there are actually relatively few types, and so the idea that you get bored with something, I'm not sure I entirely agree with. You know, the sort of ongoing, everlasting games of Tetris or the puzzle games, which often have very similar underlying themes. I mean, obviously there is going to be a need to innovate around different things, but there's a potential of new birds, and Robio is sort of doing a deal with, I think, one of the big movie producers around the Rio movie that's upcoming, bringing in characters from other games. So I think there's plenty of potential to build on that. But yes, I'm sure they are working on sort of a second franchise. At some point, they'll be well advised to do so, as you say, you know, one trick pony. But I think the difference is they have a strategy to take that one-trick pony a lot further than most people. And if you look at, you know, some of the most successful games of all time, you know, they are the ones that actually have a very common theme. I mean, you think about something like Mario or Zelda or, you know, Final Fantasy. Effectively, they're very similar to the games that they started out as. Clearly, they've been updated over the years to take into account advances in graphics and a certain amount of gameplay. But their core functionality remains very similar. And I don't actually think Angry Birds will necessarily run out of steam. I think it will continue to lay golden eggs for Rovio for some time to come. Yeah. But yes, I mean, any company that's interested in having a long-term sustainable future will want to, you know, diversify as much as possible. And there's two strands for that for Rovio, obviously. Turning it into an entertainment franchise so it moves beyond just the game. You know, we've already seen that with Plush Toys, the board games, you know, expanding onto Facebook and things like that. But I'm sure a second boat to that string would be developing a second franchise, a third franchise, you know, in due course. But, you know, Rovio have developed, you know, I think it's more than 40 or 50 games over the years, and finding one that actually sticks and becomes a hit success, you know, there's a certain amount of luck to it, but it's also, you have to keep trying. It's not an overnight success, and there's no recipe for producing hit games. If there were, there would be a lot more of them, obviously. So I think they're quite right to exploit the one they have as much as possible, but I'm sure they're putting some of their resources towards trying to develop the next big thing.
Yeah, it was interesting. You mentioned the Angry Birds, the movie there, Rafe. Of course, there is All About Symbian in the movie, which is also upcoming, which will be interesting. I know that Brad Pitt has signed up to play me, and I do know that Matt Damon has signed up to play you, so that should be good. Apparently, this is the frightening bit, Charlie Sheen has signed up to play you, and so on.
And there was me thinking it was Mike Myers.
We haven't worked out. Maybe that's he's playing David. Anyway, All About Symbian, the movie, coming to a cinema near you very soon. Our third interview from South by Southwest by Ewan is with Hizyam Halim from R7.
Ewan Spence here, All About Symbian at South by Southwest Interactive. And I'm joined by Hizyam Halim behind R7 Mobile. We've talked about it previously on All About Symbian, as Hizyam points out, but a lot of people have been going on about what do developers think about the story around Symbian 3, Windows Phone, mobile, and that gear change. And Hizyam, quite happy to, well, talk a little bit about
yeah,
it, aren't you?
I'll talk a little bit about it.
Okay, so let's go a week before the announcement, okay? What were R7's plans at that point in time?
At that point, we've been, you know, somebody in Nokia have indicated to us that, you know, AT&T is going to launch a Symbian 3 device. So we're all excited. We've got our Symbian devices ready. Our version of Symbian 3, R7 of Symbian 3 ready. And we're waiting for them to announce it firmly. But suddenly there was a rumor or an article in Wall Street Journal saying AT&T is going to cancel on that. And I spoke to some people in Nokia, and they kind of, you know, not deny it. So that was already bad news. And then a week later, the CEO of Nokia announced the switch to Windows Phone 7, which is, you know, as far as you know, from the point of view of Symbian developer, is a complete disaster, because, you know, you spent a lot of effort, money, passion, heart to develop Symbian apps, and suddenly you've been told that you got 2 years to live. It's terminal. I'm sorry.
I mean, let me put my for want of a better description, my Rafe hat on just now. And, you know, they're still promising to, like, double the number of devices that are going out there in terms of Symbian 3 sales. So, you know, you've still got 18 months to 2 years on there. I mean, that's longer than versions of Androids. That's longer than WebOS has been around completely. You know, oh, you should just keep on developing. And then when Windows Mobile comes along, you should just switch over. I mean, that's the message that they're pushing out. Is that not something that sort of works in the real world for you?
That is their version of a transition plan. In the Qt was a transition plan, because Qt would run on Symbian 3 and eventually run on Symbian 4 and run on Migo. That is what called transition. This is a complete switchover. Completely different development environment, different devices. You gotta use the tools that Microsoft gives only. The Windows Phone 7 is not quite mature yet. A bunch of stuff that we do cannot be done on Windows Phone 7 at the moment, because we have to get to the call history and messages and recording of the calls.
So R7 is actually, it's basically a live stream blogger. Yeah. It captures everything you do on your phone, allows you to put it up online and have that archived off.
Yes, correct. So we put it all on timeline. So our function is, I mean, we use a lot of the phone functions, calls, SMS, recording of the call. So those from APIs that does not exist yet on Windows Phone 7. You know, so we gotta wait until for them to release that or let us do it before developing Windows Phone 7 version. So we're really hoping that they get that ready as soon as possible before we can develop a Windows Phone 7 version. But they must do it, of course, before Symbian ends, or else we'll out of luck with two platform.
Yeah. So what do you do then? Now you had time to look at what's been proposed. Do you scale down the Symbian app? Do you carry on going full speed at that and just, you know, we've got the 2 years, let's just burn it through? How do you go forward in the short to medium term?
At the moment, we're just going to keep maintaining our Symbian 3 app, so on Symbian code. We didn't make it on Qt, again, because Qt wasn't quite ready with the call logs and SMS. And we were planning to go on Qt as soon as they're ready. That was the plan before. But now there's no reason for us to develop a Qt. So now we're just going to keep it on Symbian 3 using our, you know, C++ code, and just maintain it and fix any bugs, and, you know, just keep on going until the end of the... You know.
But you're not going to invest putting in any new features, any additional functionality in Symbian 3 C++?
I mean,
I'm not going to hold you to it, but I mean, right now you're not thinking of anything.
There's no plan for it now. I mean, honestly thinking... I mean, if you want to spend a lot of effort, especially if it's a big, huge feature, and it's only going to survive for 2 years, you know, you're going to do the math, and it doesn't make sense to invest there. I know they talk about 150 million devices, 200 million install base, and all that. I mean, you got to plan for the future, essentially. So you want your costs to be amortized over a longer period, not just 2 years. So we got to think about it.
Can I ask what your amortization plan was? I mean, was it 3, 4, 5 years? Can I ask that?
Any reasonable mobile app that we develop, or anybody develops for that matter, it depends on how much money you make when you sell it. If you sell a lot, like Angry Birds now, so obviously they recover their costs maybe pretty much quickly. Mm-hmm. In our case, because we're growing, you know, kind of slowly, so it will take some time for us to recover the cost of investment. So, you know, it's 2 years, two or three years maybe. Yeah.
And finally, do you now hold on and wait for Windows Mobile, or do you look at Android and iPhone?
We already have an Android version. We have one for BlackBerry. But Nokia is still the best featured R7 app we have out there. iPhone we can't do because they don't have API for call logs and SMS. So I suppose we just focus on Android, you know, getting it perfect, getting it as good as a Nokia version.
And then when Windows Mobile comes along, have you made a decision to look at that yet with Nokia, or are you going to wait until then?
No, we've looked at Windows Phone 7, we've got the SDK and everything, we tried it out. We still have to wait for the API for the call logs and SMS to come out before we fully deploy on Windows Phone 7. Microsoft guys have been, you know, heckling me and urging me to go and develop, but I get back to them. So when you're ready, when you're mature enough, then I'll port over R7 for Windows Phone 7.
So basically Nokia have put you into a hold pattern for 6 months.
something like that, yes.
So, Hashim, been absolutely great to have you on the Insight. Thank you very much for being so candid.
Thank you very much, Ewan.
And for those people who are looking to find more on R7, where would they go?
Just go to r7.com. You can download us from Nokia OV Store, Android Market, BlackBerry Apple. Give it a try, it's free. And you can upgrade to R7 Pro for $4 a month if you want.
Yeah, and R7 is all in letters.
That's rsevn.com.
Okay, Hashim, thanks again.
All right, thank you very much, Ewan.
Thanks, Ewan. That's another insightful interview there. And for those of you that haven't tried R7, I certainly recommend you do so. It's feature-rich and well put together. For a lot of people I've talked to, it's an essential utility that they add to their phone. But I think it's really interesting here to get kind of some of the raw feedback from a developer. And would like to thank them for, you know, being so candid and going on the record about this. But I think this is a frustration I've heard many times from existing developers, especially around the transition to Qt that was, of course, announced really back in November, but has been, you know, signposted long before that. And then the switch to Windows Phone does represent a very dramatic departure from this. And I think I've said it before, but I'll say it again here. You know, the biggest loss in the transition to Windows Phone, those who are hurt most, I feel, are the existing Symbian developers, especially those that have expertise in Qt. Now, obviously, there is potential going forward, but I think we hear quite eloquently there that not every company is going to continue to want to invest. You know, they're not going to get the return quickly enough, even with 150 million devices. And while, as I've said before, I do expect to see quite a lot, and I think it probably is worth emphasizing here, there's a whole range of opinions on this sort of decision, and that's just, I think, maybe one of the more extreme parts of the continuum of sort of opinion there that we've heard from R7. But it is something that Nokia need to address and, you know, understand how it's going to be able to transition its developers onto the Windows Phone platform. I mean, we heard Tero talking in that first interview about how important developers are for Nokia, and, you know, this is a great example of where they'll need to engage, convince people actually, you know, they need to stay with Nokia and keep on the platform. I think one of the things that came out of that interview, it was interesting to me, and it's again a pattern I've heard repeated, is the depth of the APIs on Windows Phone aren't there at the moment to support all the possible applications. And so for some developers, it's not a question of being able to transition to Windows Phone because it's not possible at the moment, because the APIs, for in order for them to be able to replicate the functionality they have on Symbian devices, is not there. I think this is one of the sort of understated advantages or, you know, benefits of Symbian, that it does have a very rich and very deep API layer. You can do almost anything you want on the phone and access the lower levels. And that's something that Android, Windows Phone and iOS simply don't have. It's going to be interesting to see how Nokia and Microsoft, you know, can work together, because I think a lot of it will be Nokia saying to Microsoft, you know, we need access to these kind of things because it's an important use case. It'll be interesting to see how Microsoft can respond to that. You know, I have spoken to a couple of people quite knowledgeable about this and do suggest that, you know, the potential is there. As in any operating system, you know, the potential there is there to, you know, create these kind of APIs. But Microsoft has been very strict on Windows Phone about creating managed code in order to maintain the stability of the platform. And obviously that's something that, you know, is a good idea for consumers, because no one wants a phone that's crashing. But this, the maturity of Symbian was that it could have these, you know, deep APIs and potentially could do, you know, damage, which is why there was all the furor around signing and that kind of thing. I think personally I feel that was mishandled, but that's another topic. But it is going to be necessary for the richness of the Windows Phone APIs to increase in order for some of the applications that are very popular on the Symbian device to be ported across.
Of course, you mentioned 150 million there, Rafe. It's just worth noting in terms of the Symbian scene, software scene, not dying overnight. There's also the 100 million Symbian smartphone as they sold last year, and probably the 100 million they sold the year before that, all of which are being actively used by people accessing the Ovi store and downloading content. So we're talking around 200 to 250 million people. So that's still a pretty sizable software opportunity throughout 2011, I reckon.
Yes, absolutely, Steve. I mean, it's possible to overemphasize this point, but I don't really think so, because I think a lot of people choose to ignore it. And yes, Symbian's been given a sort of a shelf life, but that doesn't mean there aren't going to be customers out there wanting new apps and games on their phone. You know, I think people talk about the 75 million Qt install base and another 150 million to come. And, you know, putting those together, you say well over 200 million, and that's bigger than the opportunity available on a lot of the competing platforms. I think the only one that gets close really is Android, and iOS is coming up there certainly as well. I think it is fair to say that typically we have seen less application installs and game installs on the Nokia devices. And so, you know, looking at them in absolute numbers doesn't always give you a very accurate picture. But that said, you know, the figures coming out for OvviStore on Symbian 3 devices suggest that they're anything up to 8 times more active on OvviStore in terms of downloading applications. I think that kind of speaks towards the improved OvviStore experience we've seen on the recent devices, and as well the improvements in the catalogue, you know, new applications and games being added all the time. So yes, there is a very significant opportunity there. I think particularly on the game side, we've said this before, the ease of porting things across is still going to be readily available. But also with Qt coming in, I said last week that actually I felt that some of the sort of impetus that is taken away by, you know, having Symbian with a shelf life is actually put back by the easy development of Qt, meaning that you'll be able to invest less money and get a, you know, an application running on these devices for less money more quickly. And so the overall balance may not actually be a change as people think of going down. It may go up slightly or be relatively level. Clearly, as you get nearer the sort of the end of shelf life time, you know, that will change. And the other thing I'd say, you know, although, you know, it has been given a shelf life, I think actually Symbian devices may end up lasting a lot longer than people realize. And that's because, although it's not readily apparent in anything that Nokia has said, you know, while there is still demand for Symbian devices, they'll keep selling them. And people have been a bit shy of talking about this, but I suspect there could be, you know, Symbian devices being sold for 5 years to come, and possibly even longer. You know, you look at some of the low-end devices and the typical life cycle of a product, you know, how long it lasts. It's not hard to imagine if, you know, there's a Symbian product coming out in, you know, 18 months' time, it then doing sales for 3 or 4 years after that. And so, as I say, this is not just necessarily 2 years and then suddenly everything cuts off. And of course, there's the second-hand market. And of course, there's no way of telling how the market will respond to changes. You know, Nokia have very clear plans to update the UI of Symbian and, you know, do various other software updates. And if the market responds well to those, I'm sure they will continue to sell Symbian devices for as long as they can.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're way out of time, guys. I'm going to call a halt to it there. Thank you very much to you and Spence for firing those interviews in from South by Southwest in the USA. Thank you to David Gilson for hanging in there. I gather that you've decided that John Malkovich is going to play you in the All About Symbian movie, so that's something to look forward to.
Yes, I think that's possibly the best suit for my character, a bit of craziness.
Yeah, so you've been listening in, and doubtless have David's thoughts on much of the above in next week's Insight podcast. But for now, it's goodbye from Mr. Rafe Blandford.
Goodbye, everybody.
And goodbye up in Hull.
Goodbye, everyone.
And we'll catch you all next week, when I hope Ewan will be home as well, and we'll have all four of us on the podcast. In the meantime, though, you can catch us at allaboutsymbian.com, on Twitter at AAS, at Steve Litchfield, at Rafe Blandford, at David Gilson, at Ewan. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast. See you next week.